Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and our focus today on Route 51 is the recall election in central Wisconsin's 14th State Senate District. Incumbent Republican Luther Olson will face Democratic Assemblyman Fred Clark in an election that takes place next Tuesday, August 9th. Luther Olson's hometown is Ripon, Wisconsin, birthplace of the Republican Party. He was first elected to the Assembly in 1994 and then to the Senate in 2004. His committee assignments include education, the environment, and the Joint Committee on Finance. He is a former school board president. Democrat Fred Clark of Baraboo was elected to the Assembly in 2008. His committee assignments include forestry, tourism, recreation, and state properties, natural resources, and rural economic development. He's a small businessman who owns and operates a forestry contracting company. Luther Olson is one of six Republican senators facing a recall election next Tuesday because of their votes to support Governor Walker's budget and the provision which cuts the collective bargaining powers of teachers and other public workers. Two Democratic senators face recall elections the following Tuesday, August 16th, because of their decisions to flee the state to hold up that collective bargaining law. Luther Olson will be joining us in the second half of this show. If you want to ask him a question, call after 5:30. But Fred Clark is with us right now for the first half of the show, and he will be taking your comments and questions right now at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We have wide open phone lines, so if you want to get in line, this would be a good time for you to call. Fred Clark, tell us why you decided to run in the recall election against Luther Olson. This is a man who's represented the area for more than 15 years.
Sure, Glenn, and thanks for having both Senator Olson and I on the show today. You know, I made a decision to run in this election only after a good deal of thought and a number of conversations with citizens and voters in the 14th Senate District. I like my current job in the State Assembly, and I like Senator Olson personally. So, quite honestly, my decision was made at the end of the day because I think that the stakes are so high right now in terms of what we're facing in Wisconsin and the choices that we're making about our future that we simply have to have choices. Our elected officials need to be willing to stand up and represent the people at home.
How important was that vote that removed the collective bargaining powers of teachers and other public workers?
Well, certainly the vote on the budget adjustment bill or the budget repair bill was a trigger, and the changes in that bill that included, you know, elimination of collective bargaining was one of the key triggers for many citizens in this state. But, you know, keep in mind that that bill also included unrelated provisions, you know, having to do with sale of state-owned power plants and having to do with giving sweeping authority to our health services secretary to make changes in programs like Badger Care. All of those provisions together, I think, brought citizens out in opposition. And while that started the process, what we're seeing today is that there's really a much larger set of issues at play and that are on the minds of voters.
Do you believe that being able to join a union is a fundamental human and political right, or do you believe, as the governor does, that it's a privilege and an expensive entitlement that we can no longer afford in the public sector?
You know, I think the workers' right to organize is something that we should make provision for. I believe at the end of the day, and I've heard this from many local elected officials, the city council members and the school board members who sit on the other side of the table from organized labor. Many of them will tell you that it's important to allow workers the right to negotiate with management, and that by doing it this way, you know, we've had a system in place for 50 years in Wisconsin that has worked pretty well. And if we need to make changes, what we need to do is look at the mediation, the arbitration process, to make sure that when there is disagreement, that we have the ability to generate fair outcomes.
Governor Walker says the state of Wisconsin is now open for business, and he says his policies and his budget are working because the state created 9,500 jobs last month, and Luther Olson and the other Republican senators deserve some of the credit by backing his policies. How can you argue with that?
Well, I would love to see Wisconsin truly be open for business. you know, the fact of the matter is we did have some positive numbers in the jobs report last month, but let's unpack that a little bit and look at the nature of those jobs. And fully two-thirds of those 9,000-plus jobs that were created, which is good news. I will never say that seeing new jobs created is bad news for Wisconsin, but fully two-thirds of those jobs are service sector-type jobs that are low pay, and most of them have very few or no benefits attached to them. These are jobs that it's very difficult, if not impossible, to raise a family on. And so I want to see us keep our eye on the ball of actually creating the kind of jobs that will create wealth in Wisconsin and allow workers and their families to actually, you know, thrive in our communities. And right now we've got a long way to go. And I'm concerned that we've driven some very good jobs and very good job possibilities out of this state as a result of some of our policies.
How do you feel about some of the budget cuts in that budget bill? The fact that we've got a lot of cuts going to public schools and to individual communities. I mean, mm-hmm. the Republicans say they were forced to make those cuts. They were unpleasant, but they had to because you Democrats left them with a $3 billion deficit.
Well, let's go back. In 2009, we were dealing with a $6.6 billion deficit. We balanced a budget then. We made tough choices then, too, that included cuts. Excuse me, Glenn. Going into this budget, there's no disagreement that we had more tough choices to make. We're still in a long, slow recovery, and there had to be cuts. I don't know a school administrator or a local town mayor who didn't know that we were in for reduced revenue from the state. But every budget is about choices, and where we disagree strongly is in the emphasis that this budget has placed on things that, quite honestly, don't reflect our values. We have prioritized freeway construction by sending hundreds of millions of dollars from our general fund that normally goes to support our schools. We're sending that to the transportation fund now to pay for new highway construction. At the very same time that we've cut school funding by a total of $1.6 billion, of total spending reduction, that's a historic level. And quite honestly, I think most citizens would agree that we could probably live without rebuilding a freeway for a couple of years if it means our schools are able to still do their job. And so those are some of the trade-offs in this budget that we do fundamentally disagree with. I don't think they're going to result in the kind of the long-term economic development that we need to see.
Fred Clark, Democratic Assemblyman from Baraboo. He hopes to unseat Republican Senator Luther Olson in the 14th Senate District. The election is this coming Tuesday, August 9th. We've got Fred on for the first half hour. Luther Olson will be on for the second half hour. If you'd like to call and give a comment or a question to Fred Clark, the number is 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones right now. We have June in Wausau. June, you're on Route 51 with Fred Clark. Hello, June.
Hello.
Hi, June.
It's not June. Apparently we got the name wrong. Who am I talking to and where are you calling from, sir?
Wausau is correct, and it's Jack.
It's Jack. Okay, I'm sorry. I read my computer wrong.
Sorry, a couple comments here. One is, let me start with first, good luck, Fred, against Luther. In that whole agenda, I think the Republicans clearly are trying to disenfranchise the public schools, and that's a whole other story. But what I'm interested in is this, Representative Clark. When I look at the ads of Clark and Olson and the outside interest groups, it appears that you're just a perfect pinata for the Republicans. And I'm just wondering why, with a shot at Luther, you know, you or the Democrats in the area couldn't come up with someone that would be less vulnerable. And how do you feel about those attack ads, and how do they weigh in? I mean, it looks and appears pretty tough. I mean, there had to be someone else out there that would have had less baggage and less barnacles, so to speak. Less of a pinata for the Republicans. I mean,
Jack, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's get Fred a chance to respond. And Fred, I think he's talking about your driving record, which has become the focus of campaign ads paid by a third-party group, Wisconsin Family Action. Mm-hmm. They say you've got your sixth speeding ticket this past June, that you were ticketed twice in 1 week for rear-ending other drivers. and you were caught driving on a suspended license, and that in 2009 you ran a red light and injured a bicyclist. First of all, is all of that true?
Yeah, Glenn?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I thought I lost you there.
We lost the other caller.
Right. So I appreciate Jack's question. And, you know, the adding question, you know, went back 10 years to put together information on my driving record. That is a matter of public record. At the end of the day, I think any candidate who ran in this seat in this highly contested election was going to face an immense barrage of criticism. And what we're seeing right now is independent groups especially are going to dig up any item that they can and try to portray that as a reason not to vote for somebody. What you don't see in those ads is any discussion of the issues. So what's being played out right now on television and in the mailboxes of voters is the age-old political maneuver of when you can't win on the issues, you distract people with personal attacks.
Fred, does your driving record demonstrate a degree of recklessness on your part? I think that seems to be the allegation underlying this ad. And is that something voters should take into consideration?
Glenn, it's a matter of public record. I am not a reckless driver. And, you know, voters at the end of the day will have to make their decision based on that information and based on my record as a legislator. What I've heard time and again from voters, the majority of people that I talk to, is they don't see the relevance, but they understand that what they're electing me to do is to go to Madison and represent them. And I've got a strong record as a legislator. I've got a strong record as a business owner. And that's the experience that people want to see put to work.
That ad is paid for by a group that helped organize the drive against same-sex marriage in Wisconsin. Is there a reason that they're targeting you?
You know, this is quite honest. This is simply politics. This is hardball politics. And, you know, if they weren't, I mean, they have come out with six different ads attacking me on different issues, making claims about, you know, things that happened in the last budget. And, you know, this is just par for the course, negative attack ad campaigning.
How much money is being spent by outside groups on these ads and this election? Do you have any idea at all?
On our election, I'm sure it'll top several $1 million in total spending. And I am sure that the outside groups that are weighing in very heavily on both sides of this election we'll spend four or five times the amount of money that Senator Olson's campaign or my own campaign do.
How much money is coming to you from union groups?
Well, union groups don't contribute anything to my campaign. If I have individual union members contributing to me, I welcome that. I don't track that information. You know, and what I am interested in is representing the people in the 14th Senate District, of which we have received significantly larger number of individual contributions than has Senator Olson from citizens and voters in the 14th Senate District.
Okay, we're talking with Fred Clark. He is the Democratic Assemblyman who is running against incumbent Republican Senator Luther Olson, who faces a recall election on Tuesday, August 9th, that's coming right up this coming Tuesday. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. If you'd like to make a comment or question, you can give us a call at 1-800-780-9742.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. We are profiling the candidates in the 14th state Senate race in central Wisconsin. Luther Olson, the incumbent Republican, will be joining us in the second half hour. Right now we've got Fred Clark, Democrat from Baraboo. We are taking your calls, and let's go to Tina. Tina, you're on Route 51 with Fred Clark.
Yeah, hi. I've heard and seen a lot of negative ads making character attacks against you, Fred. Do you have an answer for these, and how can these out-of-state groups get away with these lies and these personal attacks?
Well, we've kind of already covered this, but Fred, if
sure, very briefly. Tina, I appreciate the question. First of all, we don't need to respond to every personal attack that's made, because that's quite honestly a waste of our time and a waste of yours. So my campaign will continue to be until the end of this election about the issues, and that's what I'm out talking about every day with voters. You know, these recalls are fundamentally a referendum on the quality of representation. And Senator Olson is being recalled because 23,000 voters in his district signed a petition asking for his name to be placed on the ballot. I am challenging him because voters at the end of the day deserve representation, and they are going to have a real choice in this election. And what we're talking about every day is the issues that face our state and what is the fundamental obligation of a sitting senator or representative. And I believe that obligation is to represent the people at home who sent you there, not a governor, not your party leaders, not special interests. And that's what voters are going to be taking to the polls, and that's the kind of conversations we're having right now.
Tina, thanks so much for the phone call. Fred, there is an old cliche that voters are supposed to choose the politicians, but frequently it seems that politicians choose their own voters.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to comment on the new redistricting map that political scientists say is tilted in favor of the Republicans. In addition to changes in Sean Duffy and Paul Ryan's congressional districts, it affects the boundaries of a number of Senate and Assembly districts, including the 14th. Now, is it true that if you win the recall on Tuesday, you will no longer live in that district and you'll have to move to represent it because you've been drawn out of the district's boundaries?
Well, we've got to play that out a couple of steps. If those district boundaries that have been proposed become law and they survive court challenges and I win this election, yes, my home in Sauk County would no longer be part of the 14th Senate District. But, you know, Glenn, as you pointed out in the question, this is the process that got us here is so distorted and so partisan and has been so completely driven by a single agenda that voters are right to simply reject that. And, you know, I'm a co-sponsor of legislation that would create a nonpartisan commission to do our redistricting in the state, just like the state of Iowa does. Because at the end of the day, citizens at home, whether you're Republican or Democrat, people believe that something like redistricting is a rules of the game. It's a playing field type of issue that ought to be done fairly.
You know, there's an old adage for that: to the victor go the spoils. The party in power always redraws those maps to benefit them. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't Democrats be doing the same thing if voters had given them control over all the levers of power?
Well, that battle has gone back and forth for years. Now, what's different this time around is that with a Republican governor and Republican houses, taxpayer money was spent to hire private attorneys to consult behind closed doors with the Republican leadership for months to draw those maps without any public input. We've never seen a process that distorted before. But the other aspect of this that is worth pointing out is that not only does this process result in more a safer Republican majority, it results in fewer competitive seats. So what's being created here are more safe Republican seats and more safe Democratic seats. And what we have fewer of is truly competitive districts that tend to generate moderate legislators. And that's what we need to have more of if, in fact, we're ever going to get back to a legislature that works across the aisle.
Do you consider yourself a moderate, a conservative, or a progressive?
I consider myself a moderate, independent legislator. I'm a Democrat, and I support the values of the Democratic Party, but at the end of the day, the interests of the people I represent is the major consideration I take when I take a vote.
Let's go to Ned in Hortonville. Ned, you're on Route 51 with Fred Clark.
Hi. I think we should focus on what are the qualifications of the candidates. And if you like what the governor has been doing, Scott Walker, then Luther Olson's your man. He has been in lockstep with the governor on almost every issue. I can't think of a one he's broken rank with. But if you'd like to see a change in our state government, it seems like a pretty easy one. And when people start talking about driving records from 10 years ago and all these other things, that's just side issues. We got to focus on what's really important. And, you know, Fred Clark has done a great job in the assembly, and I really think it's time for a fresh voice here in the Senate. We don't need another four, you know, it's going to be a new election in next year, but we, you know, the people of Wisconsin can't afford to wait another 1 year and 4 months or whatever it is,
Ned,
until next year.
Ned, thanks so much for the phone call. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call before we hit the break. Let's go to Jim in Columbia. Jim, you're on Route 51 with Fred Clark.
Fred, on a specific issue that recently the congressional leaders in the state had to vote on, both the House and the Senate, was this effort to make it more difficult for people to vote in upcoming elections. I realize that's not a problem this time, but do you feel that this is a contrived effort or an effort to reduce the rights of people and make it more difficult for people to make a vote in the upcoming elections? And is this really fair to our people? And
Jim,
I've even read in some communities where they're closing down voting registration areas.
Jim, thanks for the phone call. We're down to our last minute. I want to give Fred Clark a chance to respond.
Appreciate it, Glenn. Jim, thanks for the question. I believe you're asking about the what's been called the voter ID bill, or what some people have called the voter disenfranchisement bill. I oppose that bill, and I'll say that if there was evidence that voter fraud happened on any significant level, I'd strongly support efforts to make sure it doesn't happen. But the fact of the matter is, you can't find examples of genuine voter fraud on the fingers of one hand. So we've passed legislation now that will increase the cost to state and local governments by millions of dollars, by as much as $30 million to implement new restrictions on voting and ID requirements. It will almost certainly result in people like senior citizens or college students and young people. They will find it much more difficult to vote, and
Fred,
as a result, many will not vote. And I think that that's a tragedy, and it's a waste of resources.
Fred Clark, Democrat from Baraboo. We will be back with his opponent, incumbent Republican Senator Luther Olson. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. We'll be back with more after this news. We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio for this afternoon's forum with both candidates in the 14th State Senate recall election. We heard from Democratic Assemblyman Fred Clark in the first half of the show. Now we are joined live by incumbent Republican Senator Luther Olson, who hopes to hang on to his seat in the recall election, which takes place this coming Tuesday, August 9th. If you've got a question or comment for Luther Olson, give us a call right now at 1-800-780-9742. That number again, 1-800-780-9742. Senator Olson, thank you so much for being with us today.
Good afternoon, Glenn. It's good to be here.
Now, the stakes are pretty high this coming Tuesday. Some analysts give the Democrats a good chance to pick off two seats, Dan Capanke and Randy Hopper. And that means control of the state Senate could come down to whether voters decide to keep you in office. Why should they do that when, according to the Democrats who are trying to see you defeated, they say the policies enacted by this governor and supported by you have arguably caused more anger, more hostility, and more divisiveness than we've ever seen in Wisconsin? Why should they reelect you or not recall you in order to keep that kind of divisive atmosphere continuing?
Well, the big thing is the things that we did are now panning out that they're working. We turned the state around when Representative Clark and Governor Doyle were in office. Last 2 years we lost 140,000 jobs. Now we're turning that around. Last month we had 9,500. That's working. Businesses are looking at the state of Wisconsin. The business climate has improved. Polls show that. And so we're giving folks some security that, you know what, the state is on the right direction. The other thing we did, of course, is balance the budget without raising taxes. And that's what people elected us to do. People are not going to see a big increase or hardly any increase as a whole on their property taxes this fall. We needed to do those things to get our fiscal house in order, and it's working. And it would be a shame that the Senate was flipped, we do a U-turn and go backwards, you know, where we came from, which was not successful.
Fred Clark says a lot of those 9,500 jobs are temporary, low-paying jobs, and you can't support families on them.
Well, you know what? It's better to have a temporary job than no job. And it's better for the state that those people are working, even though that's his spin on it. People are working rather than living on unemployment, because that means that other businesses are having to pay into that system, or the taxpayers are. So I'll take any job right now. At least we're not losing. You have to walk and crawl before you can run, and we're headed in the right direction.
Fred Clark argues that you failed your constituents by not showing independence, by voting in lockstep with the party on a number of key votes, most notably that law that takes away the collective bargaining power of teachers and other state workers. Clark said if you'd been willing to stand up with your colleague Dale Schultz in opposing that measure, people would have called you a hero and there would have been no recall drive against you. Do you regret making that vote, taking the collective bargaining rights away?
Not at all. In fact, that's a vote I'm very proud of. You know, and you know, Fred saying that, I mean, so I would have voted with Dale. It still would have passed. I mean, it would have been, what, 17 to 2? At the end of the day, after lots of soul-searching, listening to lots of folks, knowing full well what was coming down the pike with the governor's budget, realizing that there was going to have to be cuts to spending and local governments were going to get less money than they had in the past, we had two options. Have them lay off massive amount of employees, massive amount of teachers, increase the class sizes, or pass that bill that did not force that to happen and gave local units of government and school districts in this instance, the ability to make changes so they can deal with the budget that they were going to deal with.
Luther, I'm going to ask you a question that I asked you before on this show. Before you cast the vote, you said you had reservations about it. You called it radical legislation, yet you voted for it. Doesn't that make you a radical?
Well, sure. And what's the definition of a radical, Glenn? The radical idea doesn't mean it's a bad idea. It means it's radical. It's different from the ordinary. If you look it up in the dictionary, it doesn't mean a bad thing. It means this is not what commonly happens. And so it was radical. It was a total departure from the road we had gone down before, and it needed to be done.
Union supporters called the right to join a union and to collectively bargain a fundamental human right. And they point out that when Ronald Reagan was in Poland, he said the same thing. He said it was so fundamental that all other rights depend on it. Now, you've got Governor Walker calling joining a union a privilege. So on this issue, is it a privilege or a fundamental human right? Do you stand with Ronald Reagan or Scott Walker on this issue?
Well, I stand with Scott Walker because, you know, it's not in the Constitution. There are states that don't have employees can't form a union that that work for government, and fundamental human rights aren't in statutes. You know, statutes are laws that we put in place, and we did allow local units of government employees to bargain certain things, and now we don't. So that can come and go. It all changes in what the statutes looks like. So
would you be in favor in taking it to the next level and making Wisconsin a right-to-work state so nobody would have to join a union as a condition of being employed?
No, I'm not going down that road.
Why not?
Because I'm dealing with state employees, local units of government employees. That's what my concern is. What happens in the private sector, that's up to the private sector.
Luther, you served as a chairman of the Education Committee. You're a former school board president. You've been supported throughout your career by most of the teachers in your district. How does it feel now to have so many of them think you betrayed them?
Well, it's sort of sad. I mean, what's really interesting is I have devoted my legislative career for education, putting kids first, and I believe that's what I did in this budget. It's interesting. I was heard a couple school superintendents the other day say, you know what, finally now we can have the schools we need and the schools children deserve. That's what school superintendents are saying about the future of education in the state of Wisconsin by the changes that we made.
Democrats say those cuts in the governor's budget, now we've heard anywhere from $800 million to $1.6 billion, the cuts they say are going to devastate our public schools. Why won't they do that? That's a lot of money.
Well, sure, but let's put this thing, you know, that's a wild statement. We in the state of Wisconsin are 13th, 14th, 15th on how much we spend per child. If you take away the about $400 or $540, it puts us in the middle of the pack or maybe even a little higher than that on how much states spend per student. So if we can't provide a good education with the money we spend, it's time for new leaders because we can. If we were at the bottom of the pack in how much we spend per student in this country and this happened, I'd say we got a serious issue. But we were fortunate. We spent a lot. When you are a state that spends in the top third, I'm thinking, per child, and your per capita income is below the national average, we do quite well. And so to say it's going to devastate education is just a fallacy because that really says that all these other states that are doing a good job spending less than we would be spending are much smarter than us. And I don't believe that for a second.
Incumbent Republican Senator Luther Olson, who's facing a recall election in the 14th Senate District this coming Tuesday, August 9th. If you'd like to give us a call, we've got full phone lines right now, but we're about to free up one of those lines, 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Tammy. You're on Route 51 with Luther Olson. Hello, Tammy. I've got a line on. Apparently, I don't have Tammy. Caller, what's your name and what's your question for Luther Olson? Let's go to another line. We have Bill right now on with Luther Olson. Bill, you're on Route 51.
Thank you. Senator, you told Fox News that you support Paul Ryan's budget.
I think we just lost Bill. Bill, if you could call us back, and we'll try to get you back on again. Let's see. I think we do have Tammy in Portage now. Tammy, you're on Route 51 with Luther Olson. Hello, Tammy.
Thank you, Carl. My question for Senator Olson is this. I watched with great interest Senator Olson on joint finances on the budget, and especially with interest towards the funding for the child support program. Senator Olson praised the statewide child support program as being very cost-effective and well-run and held it up to other agencies in the state as an example. Senator Olson was aware of a $4.25 million error in the child support program funding for the next budget cycle. And even though Senator Olson extolled the virtues of the program and said how wonderful we are, he voted with the party not to fix the funding problem and thereby costing the state program $12.75 million in cuts because of the federal funds match. Senator Olson promised to fix the problem when some money was found. 10 days later, they found $636 million. My question for Senator Olson is, why did you promise to fix this funding problem and then not follow through when the funds were found? And also, why did you vote with your party on that budget issue when you yourself knew that the program was important and should be fully funded?
Tammy, thanks for the phone call. Luther Olson?
Sure. The day is not done. The budget's only been in place for 1 month. In a few days. We will be able to fix this thing in the future, I believe. You talk about the $600 million. We got the $600 million, but it wasn't all one chunk. It comes in over time. But what happened is all of a sudden we have all these bills that came in at the same time that pretty well drained that pot of money. So most of that money went for bills that we already had that were due. The reciprocity agreement, the patient's comp fund, we funded that thing, paying that back. We had medical assistance bills that were higher than was led to believe before that. We had University of Wisconsin heating bills that were higher, just lots and lots of bills that were presented to the state that had to be paid. So that had to be paid first. You have to pay your old bills.
And Tammy, thanks so much for the phone call. Luther, before we take a break, I want you to comment on this redistricting map that's pretty controversial. Opponents of it say that it's going to rig elections in Wisconsin for Republicans for the next 10 years. And it even goes so far as to take your opponent, Fred Clark, right out of the 14th Senate district. So even if he beats you, he'll no longer live in the district that he'll be representing. How could you support and vote for something that on the face of it seems so blatantly political and unfair?
Well, it isn't blatantly and political unfair. What we were charged with, the legislature is charged with every 10 years, is to come up with a fair map. And a fair map is one that is contiguous, doesn't have islands, that is compact as possible, and takes care of minorities. Unfortunately, Fred lives on one of the fringe cities of that district. And if you look at that district or that city, in two redistricting maps ago, that was in a different Senate district altogether. So any city that is on the edge of a district is prone to be moving from one district to another. So that's totally not unusual whatsoever.
And let's get into the voter ID bill, which, according to your opponent and according to analysis by some groups, is going to make it very difficult for a lot of vulnerable people in our state to vote. Young people who won't be able to use their college IDs, the elderly, many of whom don't drive, they'll no longer be able to vote, or they'll have to wait in line, maybe in their wheelchairs at a DMV to get registered. And according to one statistic I saw, 55% of all African Americans in the state will no longer be able to vote. Critics are saying it's discriminatory, and again, another effort to rig elections for Republicans.
If it was discriminatory, the federal government would rule it unconstitutional. This has happened in Indiana's had this for a number of years. It's working. All this talk about it's going to cause numerous people serious hardships for voting is over-exaggerated. A number of people in the election on July 12th were asked for their ID. In my district, I hadn't heard of any problem with folks showing an ID. College kids will be able to use their driver's license, or they'll be able to use their university card. I talked to somebody from the University of Wisconsin Systems. They said providing students with those IDs that the state requires will be no problem. So this is all overblown. And the reason we did this, I believe, is that free and honest elections are the basic tenet of a democracy. And when you have a large number of people, which we did in the state of Wisconsin, believe that elections were not fair, that people were double voting, people that were voting that didn't have a right to, they felt that their elections were being stolen, we needed to do something. And I believe this gives folks confidence that if you're supposed to vote in the state of Wisconsin, you can vote. And the ID will make sure that who you say you are is who you are.
Incumbent Republican Senator Luther Olson, who faces a recall election in the 14th State Senate District this coming Tuesday, August 9th. We heard from his Democratic opponent, Assemblyman Fred Clark. In the first half of the program, we'll be back with your questions right after this short break.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. We have Senator Luther Olson taking your phone calls about next Tuesday's recall election. Let's go to Asia. Asia, you're on Route 51 with Luther Olson.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to know, my question pertains to Poinsettia School closing, and there was an automated message that went out to families in the Berlin School District, but none of those who actually live in and around Poinsettia and who had frequented Poinsettia School as a part of the Berlin School District, pretty much absolving Senator Olson of all consequence involving the closing, because I know even the PolitiFact analysis that runs in the paper alleges that it's because of him voting.
Asia, I need a question from you.
I just want to know what Senator Olson's response is pertaining to that. What does he have to say about allegiance to the place where his children grew up?
Thanks so much for the phone call, Luther Olson.
Well, thanks, Asia, for that question. My brother and sister went to that school. My children went to that school. It was when I was on the school board. It was we tried to protect that school for years. In fact, we did. It used to be a K-8 district or school. Then it was a K-6. Then it was down to a K-4 because numbers had gone down. What the Berlin School District did, and I had nothing to do with this whatsoever. In fact, that's what one of the board members did a robocall saying, and we're very upset that this ad tied me to this, is that they had declining enrollments. And so they decided it was in the best interest of the school district to move those kids to Berlin because they had the classrooms, they had the teachers, the whole nine yards. And the Berlin School District had been getting heat for years from people in Berlin saying, listen, you got that little school in Poissippi. The class sizes are really little. We spend a lot of money educating those kids. It's not fair to our kids. You need to close that and bring them down here. Finally, they did that. It just was a coincidence that it happened this spring for next fall, but I had nothing to do with it whatsoever, and their board members even said that it had nothing to do with me. It just was the timing was right. They were even talking about saying, well, let's just take a couple classes out because it would be smart to move them to Berlin, and the board said, no, if we're going to do it, let's just move them all down.
Asia, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's go to Tom in Hortonville. Tom, you're on Route 51 with Luther Olson.
Senator Olson, thank you for taking my call. The reason I'm calling, I'm concerned about the family care program. I understand the state budget caps it at levels of participation of July 1st, even though you provide some money for emergencies on the wait list. From the information I've seen up here in Outagamie County from our county executive, Thomas Nelson, he anticipates potentially as high as $1.6 million to $1.7 million coming back against county levy costs for individuals who require services that otherwise would have been served in family care. I've also seen information that indicates that the wait list potentially is going to rise exponentially during this period of time because the attrition rate doesn't equal the number of individuals who are looking for this service or requiring this service. And again, this is a long-term support program that serves people who are at a nursing home level of care, and the goal is to try and avoid nursing home placement for these folks. So do you have any comments on that, please?
Sure. Family care is a great program we have in the state of Wisconsin. There's about 42,000 people in the program right now, and it was projected in the next few years it would be up to 52,000, 10,000 or a 25% growth. And unfortunately, that number and that program is going faster than the state can afford. And so what we did is said we're going to put a cap on it for a while so we can figure out how to make sure that we can meet the needs of the folks that need to be in that program with the dollars that we have expended. It was just growing faster than the state can handle. And so that's why we did that. We also make, as he mentioned, put $10 million aside so that if there's people that are in hardship cases, that their money runs out or they need to go to a nursing home when that's where they shouldn't be, that there's money to take care of those folks. So we did that. We looked at it. But I believe this will be a short-term situation so we can figure out how to get this program under control because it's breaking the state. If you look at medical assistance, we put $1.2 billion of money in that, all the money that we were bringing in new revenue in the state of Wisconsin because that program was growing so fast, and the stimulus money that the federal government helped balance the budget last time is gone. So we really have to look at medical assistance because it's a program that's growing double-digit inflation, and if we don't, we're not going to have any money for anything else.
Tom, thanks so much for the phone call. I want to squeeze in one more call, but you're going to have to be very succinct. Jack in Wausau, you're on with Luther Olson.
Okay, three quick questions. One, Luther, at first glance, great show. First one, Luther, is I'd like you to cite some evidence that suggests the American people or Wisconsin, where people were voters, were unsatisfied and concerned about voter fraud, as you said. So just give us some documented data on that. cite a study if you could.
Sure,
and then secondly,
full,
I heard you say that all third graders should be able to read by the time they exit third grade. I heard this in person, and if they can't, they should stay in third grade. So I'm just wondering how you, as a former school board member and all your knowledge, Luther, about education, how, you know, how many times you've been in the classroom, how you expect those kids, and how long are they going to stay in third grade?
Jack, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm sorry to cut you off, but Luther, you've got like 30 seconds now
sure,
to respond.
Sure, real quickly, the polls show that about 70% of the folks support voter ID. The second one on the third grade, I'm on a task force that Superintendent Tony Evers and Governor Walker is leading, and our goal is to make sure that all boys and girls by the end of third grade read at grade level. And we're looking at strategies at the kindergarten, well, even preschool, but mostly at the kindergarten and first grade level to get the kids using the schools to use research-based methods so that we can make sure that they can read no matter how they come to school.
Luther Olson, thank you so much for being with us today. We also want to thank Democratic challenger Assemblyman Fred Clark, who was with us for the first half hour. And if you live in Wisconsin's 14th State Senate District, don't forget to vote this coming Tuesday, August 9th. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Jane Ritger and Karen Carlson. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next Thursday, August 11th, mark this on your calendars. It's a free live concert with the top bluegrass band in Wisconsin, Art Stevenson and Highwater, at the Center for Civic Engagement. All you have to do is show up, or you can listen on the radio. Thanks for riding along with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.